Hi, I'm Susie Starlight.
And I'm Simon Campbell from the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin. How many more times from Led Zeppelin 1? Or in fact, Led Zeppelin, that's the name of the album. Incredible.
I was going to say, who was that then? but I knew that you...
Well, you should know, because I think we have on the turntable once a week.
We do, don't we? I still can't believe it, really.
Well, I can't. 36 hours over a few weeks to record the whole album. And the backing tracks were principally done live. So much innovation in that record. Glyn Johns, who was engineering it, not producing it, because Jimmy Page produced it, developed his mic, drum miking technique in it. You know,
yeah.
It sounds fantastic. The fuzz guitar, the, you know, everything about it. I just love that song. I love the production. I love the band. They're probably my favourite band of all time, really.
Love. I think that's all we can say about that.
Yeah.
And more love. And
John
it
Paul
is a
Jones.
Love that doesn't ever wane, does it really?
I mentioned John Paul Jones then, your nemesis.
There's a brilliant song when he does it. Steal away, just that one note. Yeah. I love that.
And then
that puts a grin on my face.
Yeah. Oh, great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But John Paul Jones, I mean, amazing bass. But well, they all were. I mean, the four members created that incredible magic between them. It was energy when you see them on stage, you know, I mean, incredible. But that album, I'm sure, you know, everybody must own it, but we play it once a week. Anyway, on to the next track.
Indeed.
Yes, I'm lonely. You know the reason why. Just like Dylan, Mr. Jones, lonely, gonna die. If girl, you know the reason why. Miss round my soul, feel so suicidal, even hate my rock and roll. Wanna die, yeah, wanna die. If I ain't dead already, woo, girl, you know the reason why.
Beatles, from their album The Beatles, also known as the White Album, released in 1968, Year Blues.
A year before Led Zepp 1. Now, there you are.
Wow, that's food for thought.
It is, isn't it?
That's kind of, okay.
Now, I know you're the bass player in this relationship, but mm-hmm. I've got to talk about the bass on that track, because it's mighty. Is he using a Rickenbacker there?
I don't know. I've been trying to find out, but it's got completely amazing attitude. I do know it was recorded in EMI Studio 2 Annex, which is actually a large closet in the control room.
Put the Beatles in. Later on in their career, just stick them in the cupboard.
That's really weird. They would say, Paul McCartney said in an interview that they were talking about this tightness, that they wanted this packed in a tin kind of sound. So they all got in a little cupboard. And they had mic leads and things and the drum kit, turned the amps to the wall and one mic for John, and they recorded it live in a closet.
Yeah, it's fantastic, you know. Again, live recording, such attitude, great sound. George Martin at the helm again, of course, and, you know, beautiful.
Apparently, John Lennon wrote it. It's credited to him and McCartney, and it was when the guys were on a retreat in Rishikesh in India.
Yeah, well, I mean, most of the Beatles tracks, because I'm reading the book by Jeff Emmerich at the moment, who's the engineer.
Of course, yeah.
And he was saying that Lennon and McCartney rarely wrote together. What they did, they wrote, and then the other person would critique the first song. And it was only very occasionally they wrote together, or they'd actually add two songs together,
yeah,
you know, of their own thing, which, you know, is quite amazing, really.
Yeah.
And that's probably why it's got such variation, because you can definitely hear a John Lennon song, and you can sort of hear a Paul McCartney song, you know?
It's funny, every time
you
talk
about... Who's your favourite?
Who's my favourite? Well, it used to be John, but now it's Paul.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, John had the attitude, but... And I'm sure we're going to get loads of emails here.
And then George, because you see, George wrote some beautiful song. George, it's just like, you know, and it was like trying to get a look in, really, because they kind of had it sewn up for a while. And I think he lacked a bit of confidence. I mean, we watched hours and hours of documentaries, haven't we, really?
Yeah.
Quite fascinating. It'll never happen again, A Time in Society, the way this has all happened. But and Ringo and the way he played drums, which basically was his style.
Yeah.
That created his own sound because of the...
Left-handed drummer.
Left-handed drummer, yeah.
I mean, it was amazing... combination of instrumental ace and, but it wouldn't have been the same without Ringo, because Ringo really added something that, and again, this Jeff Emerick book talks about how Paul worked with Ringo an awful lot about the beats.
Yeah, so of course, it's the rhythm section.
Yeah, so they'd be talking and chatting together, and John would be off having a fag, and they'd actually been working out, you know, because I mean, Paul McCartney is the consummate musician, isn't he? I mean, incredibly. He knows so much. And even at that age, he was so focused and, you know, tremendous. Anyway.
Wow. Cool.
The Beatles.
Yeah, blues.
Doing blues, yeah. So, and what have we got next?
I'll tell you what, the harmonies. This next song by Steve Miller is so beautiful. It's called Wintertime. Album Book of Dreams, Steve Miller and Wintertime, and such a beautiful, beautiful song.
It is.
I love the echo as well. So chill.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It really is. And, you know, Steve Miller, his vocal was so pure. I mean, if you listen to The Joker and some of those others, there was no reverb in his voice at all.
Mm.
And it just sounds so direct and beautiful. I mean, that has got, you know, it's treated a little bit, but he has such a presence, his vocal, you know. And I went to see him. I saw him at the Apollo in Manchester.
Did you?
I did indeed. And he was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, the band were just so professional, you know. They were obviously really quiet on stage. The sound was remarkable. It was just beautiful. Great performance and, you know, just a great show.
Wow. Now, I'd love to have seen them. Did you know the name of their harmonica player on that track? It's called Norton Buffalo.
No.
Yeah. What a great name, hey?
You can't argue with a name like that. I wish I had a name like that. Simon Buffalo Campbell or something like that. Oh, yeah. But as I say, the whole band production, it's that American sound, very American, you know.
It evokes a time for me as well, a bit like Matthew Southern Comfort with the Woodstock song. It evokes a certain time in life. And I love Steve Miller. And I love this next lady who can really kick ass on guitar.
She certainly can. And combined with John Lee Hooker, it's an irresistible combination, really.
With you, baby, I don't want to be with no one else. I can't get my thrill, baby. I'm loving to be with you. Go night time and right time. Oh, Lord, to be with the one you love. I'm in the mood, baby. Some of your love.
John Lee Hooker, Bonnie Raitt, In the Mood. What a fabulous bit of slide guitar on that.
It is, isn't it? She's really, really good.
Beautiful. Very controlled. Lovely sound as well. Great, you know. And John Lee Hooker never ceases to amaze me how he can completely bugger up everybody else that's playing with him due to the fact that all of a sudden he'll just change chord. And, you know, 12-bar blues, what's a 12-bar blues with John Lee Hooker? It might be 13 and a half or 13 and a couple of beats. And, you know, he'll just change. I mean, on some of his early stuff, you listen to it and you can hear the band in chaos because he's got to the four chord. Everybody's still banging on the one. They're going, oh, my, oh, oh. And you can hear it. And it's just chaos.
I tell you what it has taught me as well is that really it's not to be legalistic about these things. It's a structure, but it's loose. But the main thing to do when playing live is listen.
Yeah. Well, you've got to. And watch him.
Yeah.
But he didn't move a right lot either. I mean, he sat down most of the time. So there, so you can imagine playing with him. And apparently, he used to bollock the band if they made a mess anyway, even though it was his doing that. Anyway, it's... John Lee Hooker, amazing voice.
And Bonnie Raitt, you know, she's actually descendant of the Raitt clan.
Hello!
From near Name, Inverness.
Oh, up there,
up
blimey.
There, up there.
Even us Campbells are terrified of those lot up there because we're Highlanders, but they're right up there, Inverness, my goodness.
So, yeah, there's a lot of story. And the one thing when I started looking into Bonnie's career is that it took her 20 years and like 10, 11 albums to get successful. She was being critically acclaimed on the first few albums, but she wasn't getting any record sales to reflect what the critics were saying. And she kept trying different things and signing different deals. And nearly 20 years later, her 10th album, she actually got a breakthrough and a commercial success. But she's quoted as saying that her 10th album was her first sober album. So, you know, make of it what you do. But because I don't know her. I don't know. But she said that. But I mean, what I've taken from all of that is don't give up.
Yeah. And she's a fantastic woman of rock, a great, you know. Great
and she's got
woman.
A body of work as well. Yeah. And they weren't actually, you know, giving her recognizing her for her brilliant guitar work either. Because I don't think people wanted to believe that a woman could play guitar so well. Mm. I think that's the case, actually, from
well,
what I've
yeah.
read.
Sister Rosetta Tharp comes to mind.
Kick ass.
After all that. Anyway, on to the next track.
Yes, and this next track is from a beautiful lady. We'll talk about her afterwards. Have a listen to this. This is called Soothing.
Resolve. see you with love. I banish you with love. You can't come in. You don't live here.
Soothing, a song that does what it says on the tin, by Laura Marling. Taken from her sixth studio album, by the way, called Semper Femina, which sounds to me like a Harry Potter spell. Semper Femina!
And all of a sudden the whole
Wingardium
audience
Wingardium Leviosa!
The whole audience disappears. Yeah, well, there you go. Produced by Blake Mills. Now, we're obsessed with sound and production.
Yeah, we are.
In our whole household, because, of course, we have a recording studio where we record our own material and other people, some great people we've recorded. Some of our best times we've ever had, actually,
yeah.
You know, recording and working with other musicians. But the production on this is sensational, you know. I'm set back, the drum sound, a vocal sound, hardly any reverb at all, and it's just a beautiful, simple production. But I know for a fact that to get it sounding as beautiful and simple as that, a lot of care has been taken in miking the drums up, miking, you know, everything up, the compression. It really is a beautiful piece of work. Of course, the song is great. She's great. Lovely lyric. You know, we love Laura Marling. She's, you know, we listen to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, beautiful.
I didn't realise that she was actually originally in the original lineup of Noah and the Whale. And she was part of that new folk kind of movement, but she left because I think she had a relationship with the lead singer that ended. But she's just been, and the original members of her first band were some of the guys from Mumford & Sons.
No.
Yeah. See, it's a family thing. Everybody's like in it and like swapping around and playing together. And I really like that. And I don't really know much about Laura. And I just know that, When I hear her music, it's beautiful. It's just simple. It's thought about. It's beautiful.
She's not overstaying.
No.
She never oversings.
No.
She shouldn't overperform. It's just honest, you know?
Yes. It does make me feel that she's talking about right now in such a beautiful way. And it's a gift, actually. I find her music as a gift.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Mm. And now, talking of gifts, let's get on to this next track, which is going to blow your socks off.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some
wicked sides. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? Judge us simply cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right, right on. Right on.
Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, with mighty James Jameson on bass.
Get straight to it. The man, the bass man, the funk machine, James Jameson. There's a story that goes with that. You can see it. It's in that Motown film, The Standing in the Shadows of Motown, the 2002 film. So when Marvin Gaye was recording this song in the studio, he was desperate to have James Jameson, Mr. Bass, on the session, but he wasn't there. So they went scouring the local bars trying to find him. And they found him and they brought him back to the studio. But he was so drunk, they actually had to lie down on the floor on his back and played the track. And they used the first take.
Well, there you go.
That's some cool man.
So Bonnie Raitt took 9 albums and the 10th he was sober. James Jameson had to play this on his back because it had fallen over. Amazing.
I've studied that song as well. I mean, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. And I love the way that he plays because it just really opens up so much.
He's got just great movement and his sound. And you know, beautiful. And he went straight into the board as well. That's how he recorded his bass. You know, old jazz bass, straight into the board, fantastic sound.
And those heavy gauge labella strings, apparently, he's the older the better, so the action was almost unworkable and nobody else liked his basses, but he thought it improved the tone. Get in there.
Yeah.
It's probably because he had really strong fingers from playing upright double bass.
Some foam under the bridge. Yeah. Anyway, we're talking a lot of bass
here.
Yeah,
aren't we? Well, why are we talking bass? But that was Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. What a beautiful song and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
It was it an anti-war song?
It was. Actually, there was the Four Tops were on tour and one of the members of the band had seen some police brutality on anti-war protesters at Barclays People's Park, and he was talking, they called it Bloody Thursday, and he was talking to one of the Motown writers about that experience, and they basically wrote the song from his experience and gave it to Marvin, who rewrote some of it and personalised it a bit. And that's the history of that song, a protest song.
And he had produced it as well. It's the first one he produced, I think.
It was, actually. And when I say protest song, I'm wrong, because actually Marvin Gaye said that it was a love song. What's going on? Because I think, you know, people were a bit wary about that. He said, no, it's a love song. It's like, what's going on?
Great.
In Love. But it was the first one where Marvin Gaye got credited, and also the house band, the Motown house band, they got credited as well the first time. So they're cool, eh?
Well, talking of one mighty bass player, and why are we talking so much bass? I don't know. It's you. You're doing it to me. But let's go on to another mighty bass player and a mighty guitar player.
Thank you.
Further Up the Road by Eric Clapton, written by Bobby Bland, or Bobby Blue Bland, the late great. Unbelievable, unbelievable.
I love that name. Well, Blue Bland.
Yeah, Blue Bland. Well, he's Bobby Bland, and they call him Blue Bland because he wrote the blues.
Yes.
Very famous blues writer. He's written a lot of songs, that guy, but nobody really knows him. But I'm going to wax lyrical about this track, because it's my opinion that EC Was Here, which is from the live album, produced by the mighty Tom Dowd,
Tom,
is Eric's best work. Now, you may not agree, but I certainly do. But his guitar playing was remarkable. Have you ever loved a woman on this? It's so broken. It's so beautiful. He's got the sound. He's got the feel. George Terry there. A great compliment. At that end where he's going, that do ba da dee ba doo da doo doo da. George Terry underneath the guy. It's just beautiful. And, of course, the dream team of Jamie Oldacre and Carl Radle on bass. So what a rhythm section.
Yeah.
Oldacre. And, you know, I've played this track a lot over the years, but I've never had anybody do it properly, because that double kick drum all the way through, da-dum, da-dum, it is quite difficult to get that shuffle and actually do that at the same time. And it's absolutely beautiful. Anyway, I'm sure you're now going to talk about Carl Radle.
No, I was going to say, actually, to actually get a drummer who can actually do a real shuffle is a bit of a rarity, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're very blessed that our drummer that we're working with in the Stark Campbell Band, Steve Gibson,
of course,
is a master shuffler.
Mr. Shuffle.
And I'm going to have to tell you a little story. We, of course, we mentioned the studio before, and we had one of the world's greatest, and he is one of the world's greatest jazz drummers, in a guy called Jorge Rossi from Barcelona, Spanish dude. And he heard Steve play. We were mixing, I think we were mixing something at the time. I think we were mixing our album, actually.
Yeah.
And he popped in and he said, "That is one mean ass shuffle."
Yeah.
And
it's true.
And it was Steve, and it was playing, I think it was playing, I can't remember which track it was now. But anyway,
I don't know. Was it Say What You Want? Anyway,
yeah, it was Say What You Want.
I think it was, yeah.
That's right. But they are. So, and Steve, he does do an absolutely fabulous shuffle. And I think he actually got complimented by Jamie Oldacre. And Stevie, I think he put something up on his wall saying, "Oh my God, Jamie Oldacre said that he liked my drumming," or something.
He's
virtually in tears.
Family. I think as you start to get to know us better, you realise we are a music family, isn't it?
So, we certainly are.
Yeah, and the one thing I haven't seen yet, which we need to see, is I want to go and see the new Eric Clapton documentary, A Life in 12 Bars.
Mm.
I mean, some people say that it's a little bit... I looked at some of the reviews, you know, and I just want to go and see it myself and make my own mind up, and because everybody has their own... It depends how you feel. Have you had enough popcorn? Do you need some sugar? Have you had enough sleep? You know, all these things can affect the way that... are you in a good mood? Are you impatient?
Well, I mean, Eric's been through the mill. And,
he has.
You know, I say that's his greatest album. You know, the Cream stuff. Who he worked, of course, again with Tom Dowd earlier on. Those early albums with Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker in New York, you know.
Yeah.
Because we did a producer series on Tom
Dowd.
I can't remember what episode it was about, episode 13 or episode 12 of our podcast. And, you know, he was saying that he was quite a difficult man to work with, because they used to do a lot of jamming in the studio, and Glyn Johns wouldn't work with them because Glyn Johns used to run things like military precision and Tom was more sort of easygoing. And so Glyn Johns gave up the ghost and Tom took over.
I think we've learned as well that, and even from our own experience, you know, you can be really, really talented, but actually on the day it's about the chemistry of the people that you're actually working with, as people to people, not just whether or not you're a great producer. I think you have to really connect as people to get the best out of people.
Indeed. But back to EC Was Here, you know, mighty. I'm very sad to, I don't know who's playing keyboards on that.
No.
But on Hammond, and I will look up and we'll tell you next time. But on to the next track. Now, this is something completely different.
Dick Sims.
Oh, Dick Sims. Who's Dick Sims? Well, and he plays great. Anyway.
Organ.
Ah, right. Well, the next track is something completely different. Another cover, but a very unusual one, by a band that you just wouldn't expect.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. Been out in front.
are gonna fall.
A Hard Rains Are Gonna Fall, his first ever solo single from the 1973 album From These Foolish Things.
And that's it for this week. So we'll see you next time. If you want to contact us, mail us on podcast@supertonerecords.com or Twitter, or look at Susan Simon, Starlight Campbell on Facebook. We're everywhere.
Indeed. And we're on Rock Radio every Thursday at 4.
See you next time.
See you later.